Have you ever heard the sound of freedom? Have you ever heard the sound of freedom?
You are listening to The Flip Side with Noah Filipiak, connecting the reality of the gospel to the grit of life. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/NoahFilipiak or at NoahFilipiak.com/give.
What is up? This is episode 2 of the Flip Side podcast. If you are listening to the Flip Side, you are part of an elite group of podcast listeners. You know what that means? Elite means highly skilled, highly intelligent, and pretty small. It pretty much just means there's not very many of you. So, if you want to help make the Flip Side less elite, I mean, I know it's pretty cool to be elite and to be one of the elite, but if you want to help out, you know, why don't you share this bad boy? Why don't you take this link and put it on your social media page? Because it's all about the social media, and say, hey, there's this podcast I listen to. You should try it while you're doing dishes or while you're driving in your car. But like I said in episode 1, probably not while you're working out. I don't know if I should repeat the same joke as last time. Repeat listeners, I'll just repeat the same joke. I don't listen to podcasts when I'm working out. I think if you listen to podcasts while you're working out, it might be why you're not in shape. You're like, hey, I need something with a beat. I need some rap music. Like, I got Kyle Lake in the background right now. Like, I can work out to this. Right? But a podcast, like someone just talking over and over again, you might want to turn the podcast off and turn on some K-Lake, man. Go to at K-Lake Music. And thank you to Kyle Lake for the promo music for this podcast. But all that to say, when you do listen to podcasts, and look, if you listen to it when you work out, that is more power to you. But share the flip side-ness of the podcast. That'd be awesome. Couple things to catch you up on. Man, I'm such an old man. Like, I use Facebook and Twitter, which are like the old person social medias. I don't use Instagram, mostly because of all the porn that's on it. And I don't really use YouTube. I don't have a channel until now, which I'm telling you about. But I'm trying to catch up. I have people saying, hey, you should have a YouTube channel. And what's cool is I found out with Podbean that when I post these, I can post them automatically to YouTube. So if you're into YouTube, I do have a channel. You can find me. Just look up Noah Filipiak and you can get all the podcast episodes there. And also, a friend of mine said, well, I listen to all my podcasts on Spotify. And I'm like, I didn't even know Spotify did podcasts, but they do. And so now you can also get The Flip Side on Spotify. To find it, you'll want to look up The Flip Side with Noah Filipiak. There's a few other Flip Side podcasts out there. This one is, of course, the best, but you'll have to put my name in along with it to find it. Yeah. So one other thing I talked about Patreon last week. We have some goals set. When I did a survey of changing this podcast around, so this is episode 2, but it's also episode 64 of all the podcasts I've ever done. I just switched things up, and it's going to be the Flip Side from here on out forever, hopefully. But I am committed to the Flip Side, not in the same way that I'm committed to my wife. Like, I'm committed to her. I'm committed to Jesus. That's like top level commitment. I'd say the Flip Side is next level down is pretty good. I'm hoping it's like a 21st century relationship. Yeah, I'm hoping that this works out. I'm not going to sign a covenant or anything like that. But hopefully the Flip Side format won't change. But even though I've changed podcasts like 4 times, but this time it's for real. So Patreon, I did a survey with my last podcast. Said, hey, I want to switch some things up. I want to make the podcast better. Hopefully I've done that. On that survey, that a lot of my listeners, by a lot, I mean a lot of the elite, the elite, and then a lot of the elite. So not very many, but a lot of listeners filled that survey out, gave some great feedback. That's why there's all these format changes. I also said, hey, if I set up Patreon, would you support? and a decent amount of people said they would. I was sort of surprised. And by support, you go to patreon.com/NoahFlipiak. There's a $3, $5, and $10 monthly donation that you give. And it's basically your way of saying, I want more of this content. I want to support this content. And I've set up goals. Initially, the goal was if we get 15 patrons, then I'll commit to bi-weekly episodes. And if we get to 25, then I'll commit to weekly episodes. And the idea behind that is then I can make it a part of my job. I can be disciplined. You're kind of like my boss. It's like, I have you supporting this podcast. Let's got to get this episode out and make it good and quality and all those sorts of things, because my podcasts up to this point have been a little bit random and sporadic, and I don't think that's good for anybody. So we did not get to 15 in the last week and a half or so. We got to 3. So, you know, 3 is better than 0. Not, there were more than 3 on the podcast survey who said they would support via Patreon. So if you're out there and you check that box on that survey, let's go, right? I want to say shame on you. Like, how could you say yes and then where are you? But shame doesn't motivate, right? So let's not say that. Let's say let's go. Actually, what I did, the 3 people that signed up, they're pulling the weight for everybody else. I mean, one person signed on for like way more than $10 a month. I didn't even know you could do that. The other 2 signed on for $10 a month. So that's encouraging and cool. So, hey, get on there and you could support for $3 a month. You probably could figure out how to just do it for like $1 a month. I'll count that as a patron. And so those first 3 are holding. They're carrying the weight. They're carrying the load for you guys. Yes. So thank you. So if you want to join, once I get to 10, then we'll get in a rhythm. We'll have a day that this thing's out. It'll be a set day of the week, and there'll be a nice disciplined rhythm to it. So we'd love to get you on board with that. Today is March 5th. Covenant Eyes Screen Accountability comes out today. It's been out a little bit up to this point in beta versions, but it's out publicly today. What that means is now on your devices, your screen will be monitored. If you are using Android mobile devices, then all apps are monitored. So what that means is Instagram, Snapchat, etc., YouTube, anything you're on, any browser, if the phone sees pornography, it has an algorithm that picks up pornography, and then it's going to send screenshots that are blurred out to your accountability partner. And any kind of like bank information, that sort of thing, that's all blurred out as well. Nothing is saved that isn't blurred out, but now your accountability partner can see what you're actually doing online. Same for your Mac, your PC, all this sort of thing. The only thing they're still working on is if you're using iOS, iPads they're called, and iPhones. Yeah, pretty fancy inventions. Those 2, the screening of accountability does work, but only through the Covenant Eyes browser, so just a heads up on that. But if you want to try out the screen accountability or Covenant Eyes in general, I have a promo code. It is BEYOND, sort of like my book, Beyond the Battle. So just type in the word BEYOND at checkout, and that will give you 60 days for free. But I think screen accountability is going to be revolutionary to help a lot of people be more pure when they're online and help their kids be more pure online. And lastly, on the announcement part of the podcast, beyondthebattle.net, if you want to do an online group with me. This round of groups is almost sold out. I was like, wow, crazy. First time that's ever happened, to be honest with you. So I went ahead and set up the next round as well. So if you miss out on this round, you can get in for next round Tuesday nights and Saturday mornings. I told you last episode, well, we have a mailbag. The email is podcast@beyondthebattle.net. podcast@beyondthebattle.net. I gave you a little teaser that this episode's mailbag was about masturbation. And then I thought about it and I said, man, the intro, I'm telling you to post this podcast on your social media, and I'm realizing that the word masturbation is going to be in the title. That probably means nobody's going to post it. Yeah, that's cool. That's all right. We'll stay with the same elite listeners as the first episode, and then maybe episode 3 you'll be comfortable posting, or you go back and post episode 1, but No chance you're going to post this one because the word masturbation will be in the title. But without any further ado, let's jump into the mailbag. All right, so this question comes from an anonymous person, which, again, you are more than welcome to do. This podcast, we're covering sort of all topics, but obviously my book, Beyond the Battle, is talking about, you know, sexual sin. It's talking about temptation, struggle, stuff that we all go through. And there's going to be some things you want to ask about, like masturbation. And you may not want your name attached to it, and that is totally fine. So, again, the email you can write into is podcast@beyondthebattle.net. I would love to get more email, and it doesn't have to be a topic for the show. You can just ask a question, say something stupid and snarky. I would like to have fun with that on the podcast as well. So this one is from an anonymous person, and he says, even when I go through the week, it is a guy, and I'll say that because, you know, guys and girls, both masturbation is an issue for, but there's different angles, obviously, I think, for each. So different, but what I mean by that is there's different, it's a different struggle, it's a different topic, and certainly as a guy, I'm more familiar with the guy struggling with this, so there certainly is overlap. So question is this, he kind of writes a few things out and then gets to the question. Even when I go throughout the week not searching for or even really seeing tempting images, I still struggle with masturbation. It has been something I struggled with since I was probably 12. I'm familiar with arguments concerning the topic. The one saying, as long as you don't lust, it's okay. And the other side that says it's always wrong for a single person. Personally, as a single guy, I feel that it is better to be avoided altogether, even if the actual act isn't sinful, because I just can't seem to separate lust and masturbation. Here's my question. Do you have tips regarding how to stop masturbating? One book I have read regarding men's purity basically said to just stop doing it, which to me is rather discouraging, as I have been struggling with this for over 10 years. I would have just stopped if it was seemingly that easy. Great question. So, I almost put a section in Beyond the Battle about masturbation, and I didn't. And I was kind of waiting for it to come up in the podcast. The last 12 episodes I did prior to the flip side were the Beyond the Battle podcast. And I'm thankful that it finally did. It is something that needs to be talked about. When I do my Beyond the Battle small groups, it frequently comes up in the one-on-one kind of off-air. We do an email accountability sort of thing, and it typically will come up in that setting. So the reason I didn't put something in the book about it is because it is polarizing, and it wasn't that I'm afraid of, I'm not afraid of controversy. If you read my blog, I mean, I write about a lot of controversial things on there, and that's something I'm comfortable doing. But the reason I didn't put something in the book about it is because with the polarizing nature of it, as this person in their question mentioned, there's these different viewpoints about it. One thing, the most important thing I didn't want to do is cause somebody to sin. Okay, so I'm going to give you an answer that I think is the most biblical answer we can come up with. And I think it's important that we don't add to the Bible and we don't subtract to the Bible. And that's often what we do when it comes to masturbation. And there's some fine lines, and we often just ignore the fine lines and we just do like this broad brush stroke, and that's it. It's we ignore the nuances to it. So all that to be said, my fear is giving someone what might sound like a green light to masturbate, and what it's really doing is giving them permission to fall further into sin. And I never ever want to do that. So whenever I respond to this question, I always say, first and foremost, listen to the Holy Spirit's convictions in your life. And if at the end of the day, like this person who's single, and look, he's saying, I can't separate lust from masturbation, then yeah, you're in a spot where you should certainly try to stop. And I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but because there's a lot of places to go with this. But before I get there, let me first say this. Okay, the Bible does not mention masturbation. There's a little spot in the Old Testament that I rarely hear anymore someone mention. It's about Onan spilling his semen, and it has nothing at all to do with masturbation. I'm not even going to get into it because it's completely different than masturbation. It's not talked about in the Bible. So if someone were to say, the Bible says masturbation is wrong, it's a sin. No, it just doesn't. It's not in the Bible. You really should not add things to the Bible. That's just, it's wrong because that's legalism. You're adding rules to the Bible. You're adding a level of obedience that's not even in the Bible. And first and foremost, masturbation is very much filled with shame, right? That's why I joked, like, you're not going to share this episode on your podcast, on your social media, because it has the word masturbation in it. And masturbation is filled with shame, particularly for Christians. Shame is this feeling that there's something wrong with me. And we'll talk quite a bit about shame as we go through the podcast in different ways, because it is really enlightening when you realize, like, guilt is, I feel bad for the things I've done. But shame is, I feel bad for who I am. And those are two very different things. Like, guilt is, I've done bad things. Shame is, I'm bad. I'm bad. And that's another subject as well. But when we talk about masturbation, we usually feel like I'm bad. And there's, let's see. Okay, back to the Bible. I got 10 things I want to say. I'll try to do it in order in a way that makes sense. So what the Bible says is wrong is lust is one word used. Sexual immorality is another word used. You know, Jesus says in Matthew 5, 27 to 28, that whoever lusts over a woman has committed adultery with her in his heart. And this is the idea of desiring a woman sexually that's not your wife. And lust happens in so many different ways, right? In pornography, also in the fantasy thoughts of our mind. So if you're masturbating and lust is associated, which it typically always is. So let's just say a few things that are black and white. Masturbation associated with pornography, obviously a sin, obviously an addiction problem, obviously something that needs accountability and repentance and needs to stop. When it comes to masturbation and thinking lustful thoughts, it's the same thing. I mean, lust, there in Matthew 5, 27, they didn't have pornography back then. I mean, lust would have been you're looking at a woman with your eyes. Lust would have been then you have that image in your mind, just like you have a pornographic image in your mind, or you're conjuring up those images that you've looked at before. And so the fine line here, and this is what the person asking the question was getting to, is biblically we can say the act of masturbation, and talking about a single person here, a single guy, potentially single female as well. I do not claim to be an expert on female masturbation, but just speaking of what the Bible says, if masturbation is done without thinking lustful thoughts, then it's not a sin. Now, it's also not that simple, because as the person asking the question was alluding to, basically, if I try to do that, 10 out of 10 times, I end up thinking lustful thoughts. 100% of the time, I end up thinking lustful thoughts. Or even if it was 50% of the time, like, I'm going to do this, I'm not going to think lustful thoughts, and then 50% of the time, there they are, then we need to deal with that more like a sin with accountability and repentance and those sorts of things. But that doesn't mean it's a sin when lustful thoughts are not involved. You still can't change what the Bible actually says. And here's a couple more things about it. Where a lot of the shame comes in is we take, like, the association of masturbation plus porn, and we treat all masturbation like it's like that. Like, for example, I have a group of guys and I love, and they're really all about purity. They're all about vulnerability, and to the point where it's almost like an extreme vulnerability, where it's a little, it's like, we're going to shock each other with how vulnerable we can be and ask these shocking sort of questions, and it's cool. And for the most part, it's like a culture where, like, you know, shame has no place here. Everybody's loved, and so we can talk about absolutely anything and everything. So a common question would be, when's the last time you masturbated? And even asking that, like, a guy was speaking and there was a Q&A, and it was all guys, but another guy from this group, his question was, when's the last time you masturbated? You know? And again, the point is, like, hey, we're being vulnerable here. There's no shame, that kind of thing. But
I think the problem with some of that, and the problem with the point I'm getting at, the problem is treating all masturbation like it's the pornography-related masturbation or the lust-related masturbation is, like, that guy could be in a place where he was masturbating and it wasn't in a sinful way, and now he's being asked that question as if it's always sinful. And it's not always sinful, particularly for single guys in those situations. And I'll tell you, I'm kind of in between on this. I'm trying to uphold both sides of saying, look, the Bible doesn't say it's explicitly wrong, but I also realize it can become wrong in a hurry. It can also become compulsive and become addictive, and there's those issues as well that the Bible does hit on. 1 Corinthians 6:12, verse 13, I believe, is the one that says, but I will not be mastered by anything, this idea that this stuff can just take a hold of you and it masters you. Pardon the pun. I don't think that was intended, but there it is. So single guys, married guys, okay? I did a blog post. I'll put this in the notes, but this was, I've never done a blog on masturbation, but one time I mentioned it in an article. The article was parenting advice on how to raise boys in this over-sexualized world, kind of right after the Me Too movement began. And I have a section in there towards the bottom about masturbation. And when somebody asks me about masturbation, I usually give them this article and ask them to read it. But basically, I give a couple of different perspectives in there. I have a Christian friend who feels like when he masturbates, it's as evil as if he cheated on his wife. So he's married and he is crushed when he struggles with masturbation, like he cheated on his wife. And that reminds me of guys in my groups where they have come so far in their purity. We do these 7-week Beyond the Battle groups, and it's like they're not looking at porn anymore. They're overcoming lust like in incredible ways. Their eyes aren't immediately going to women's chests, and you know, the way they're processing women is better, and they're experiencing all this freedom. And I'm getting updates from them, and they are just raking themselves over the coals because they're still struggling with masturbation. Not pornography-related masturbation. Sometimes a thought, fantasy sort of masturbation, but not always. But the point is, they don't have any capacity to celebrate the freedom they're finding from where they were just a few weeks ago or a few months ago to where they are now, because masturbation it's not a daily thing, not a 5 times a day thing. That's a whole nother sort of situation, but it just periodically happens, and they are just crushing themselves because of this, sort of like, in the article, I talk about this friend that feels like he's cheated on his wife when he masturbates. Some people feel that way about it. I talk about this Christian doctor who corrected me, and I say with gusto, he was actually pretty upset when I was a youth pastor, and I was teaching the teen boys in our youth group about masturbation. This was 15 years ago when I was a youth pastor. And at the time, I felt like all masturbation was wrong. And that's because for me, masturbation had always been associated with pornography and, you know, lustful thoughts and addictive behavior. And so I was telling these teen boys that it was always wrong. And he explained to me medically how unhealthy it was to teach this to teen boys. And he was a very conservative Christian and a brilliant doctor, and he was very upset because he's basically saying God made the male body to ejaculate, and masturbation for teen boys is how that's going to happen, and you telling them to stifle that, at the same time telling them it's a sin spiritually, it's heaping up all of this unnecessary shame, like they're committing a sin, but meanwhile their body's just doing something that God designed their body to do, because people used to get married when they were 13, and people don't get married when they're 13 anymore in this culture. So I'm not saying that as my view or my perspective. I'm saying that as this Christian doctor who's a very conservative, biblically grounded Christian, that's his view on this medically. James Dobson, head of Focus on the Family, very conservative organization on sexuality and Christian values. He's been ripped sort of up and down by not taking a harsher stance against masturbation historically. There's been stuff that he's written about. So there's a variety of views on it. When it comes to masturbation within marriage, I would take a much more conservative view. I would lean towards it's almost always wrong within marriage, and few reasons for that, and I'll give you someone who would disagree. That's respectable. So another friend, he was sharing how if his wife didn't want to have sex, he's like, fine, you know, I'll just go masturbate. And it was sort of like out of spite, right? And look, that's going to happen in a marriage. And typically makes it sound stereotypical. I don't mean that. But in the couples I've counseled, it is sometimes the other way, where the wife wants to have sex more times than the husband. But there's a lot more cases, anecdotally, that I've counseled where the husband wants to have sex more than the wife. And that's just the reality of marriage for those couples. And so he's like, yeah, I would just masturbate and then fine. It's, you know, it's done. And then he said, I realized I stopped pursuing my wife. I just stopped altogether because I just gave up on it. And it was like, yeah, whatever. And that was a real problem in his marriage. And he's like, I can never masturbate again because it's ruining my marriage. I'm not pursuing my wife anymore. And so that's a huge, huge thing. And I think in general, the safest answer within marriage is it's always wrong. Now, there's a book called Sheet Music by Dr. Kevin Lehman, and it's spelled L-E-M-A-N. It's a book that my wife and I read 3 years into our marriage. A fantastic book that helped save our marriage in certain ways. And I'm not comfortable with the way he writes about everything. It's bizarre in certain ways. It's basically a Christian book. It's a good, sound, it's not crass book about sex within marriage and kind of helping Christian couples have a better sex life and these sorts of things. I always give some cautions because it is a kickback love idea. Talk about that in Beyond the Battle if you're familiar with that. But as far as like tactical stuff, if you want to call it that, that's just important. You're not going to get good answers on some of this stuff from asking your pastor. Probably not stuff I'm going to answer on the podcast either. Sheet Music does some really good things in there. But one of the things that Lehman does in Sheet Music is he like encourages masturbation for married couples. And I'm not totally comfortable with that, but he is, and he's a respected person. And this is he's helped a lot of Christians, and you don't have to agree with everything in a book, but just know that that's part of it. He basically talks about it as a self-exploration for a woman to figure out how you can best experience an orgasm and then teach your husband how to do that to you and with you, I should say. And then for a guy, he talks about how it can help, I believe he says, with kind of helping you last longer with your wife in, you know, this sort of thing. And he also talks about if your spouse is away for a long period of time, how it's appropriate and those sorts of things. And so the point of bringing all this up isn't to just have what is full transparency, an awkward conversation for me to have about this subject. Probably awkward, maybe a little bit for you to talk about. It doesn't have to be awkward, but it's okay to be like, yeah, it's masturbation. It's going to sound a little awkward to talk about and listen to. But the point is, this is a real part of everybody's life, man or woman. I think more so for men, but certainly real for a lot of women, and something that is not the same sin as cheating on your wife. It's just not. And to not treat it that way, to not add to the Bible, I think that's a huge thing, is to take the Bible for what it actually says. But then to be real and say, you have to be gut level, brutally honest with yourself. Is this causing me to sin? If it is, I need to stop. That's it. And have people you're accountable with. And is this, am I controlling this, or is this controlling me? And that gets back to this question, this anonymous question from the mailbag. He wants to know how, tips on how to stop. And part of the reason here I lean into that doctor's that Christian doctor, he would say, like, you can't stop. Sounds like you're 22 if you were 12 when you started, and it's been going on for 10 years, and you're a single guy. And my Christian doctor friend would say, you can't stop. And I would say, try to limit as much as possible the lustful thoughts that are there during that. And certainly there's wet dreams, and when you use the bathroom, your semen is going to come out, but it's got to come out some way. I mean, it is just the way that God made you. And so I would say you want to manage it. You want to manage it. You want to make sure that you're aware, and your accountability partners are aware, and that this is something that you're eliminating lust as much as humanly possible. But I'm not sure you can stop. And if you disagree, you know, you can let me know. I will say this. I think you can stop, because I've stopped when I was single for different seasons in my life, certainly others not. But in that, I've had people feel guilty about wet dreams. And it's like, dude, you can't control that at all. You can't control what happens while you're sleeping. This is just the way that God made you. And I'll tell you what, there's certain people, some Christian, but certainly in the secular world, that would just laugh altogether that we're even having this conversation. Like, oh man, you Christians, you find ways to beat yourselves up. Like, to them, this is such a normal, natural, just sort of healthy part of life. I'm not going to go that far, but I'm just saying, know that part of the problem with this is the shame that we heap onto it. And we need to not treat this the same way we treat pornography. And I think maybe that's one of the points I'll close with, because that's, I think, what irritates me the most is when I hear masturbation talked about. I'll be honest with you. If you guys follow Triple X Church, I think they do a lot of good work. And I used to follow them a lot more, and I don't now for various reasons we can talk about. If you're curious, ask me. But they do a lot of extreme stuff just to, like, shock people and get people's attention. And yeah, there's good and bad to that. But they used to have these t-shirts, maybe they still do. And it was a t-shirt you wore and had a kitten on it. And it said, God kills a kitten every time you masturbate. And it was like, ha, this is so funny. And this will help people not to masturbate. And I just think that's really not. It's wrong. I don't think we should be sending out that kind of message, because it is heaping on shame in an area that, again, questionably isn't even always a sin. And yeah, I mean, you don't, I get they're trying to be funny. I get that part of it. I get the satire. I don't have necessarily a problem with that. I have a problem with associating all masturbation like it's the same, because I'm counseling guys who are just feeling like scum of the earth. And it's like, dude, manage that, and let's talk about that. And at the end of the day, I'll say, I will hold you accountable if for you it is like, I never want to masturbate, and I am as convicted about that being as bad as pornography or cheating on my wife. Look, I respect that totally, and I'm going to hold you accountable to that. But I'm going to do what I can to not fan the flame of shame that's unnecessarily added to masturbation. And I'm going to do what I can to separate it from pornography and masturbation together, lust and masturbation together. Let's separate it out and treat it as its own thing, because it is its own thing. So I hope that is helpful. Whew. Done with that. Done with that topic. Man, that was a heavy hitter for episode 2/64. So topic of the day today is actually going to be a little bit shorter. I'm going to keep these podcasts about an hour long or so. And today's topic of the day is going to be a little bit briefer, but it's just talking about Lent. Why Lent is awesome. So today is National Poonchki Day, also Fat Tuesday. Tomorrow is Ash Wednesday. And that's the beginning of Lent. Ash Wednesday, Lent goes through Easter. Depending on your Christian tradition, Lent means so many different things. my job in the next 10 minutes is not to give you a Wikipedia history of Lent and all the different ways it's used and all these things. You can go to Wikipedia for that. What I'm going to do here is tell you a little bit about what Lent was like for me as a Baptist growing up. I grew up in a Baptist church. I don't claim necessarily to be Baptist anymore. I would say theologically, I would be probably like Reformed Baptist, something like that. Even though those labels aren't always helpful and needed because they, some of you just turned off. You're like, unsubscribe, never will listen to Reformed Baptist talk again because that's not what I am. So my point is not that. My point is, I guess I'm still an evangelical in the sense that I'm not ashamed of the label of saying I believe the Bible's God's word. I believe that Jesus is the only way to heaven. And I think that is what an evangelical technically is, even though there's tons of baggage on that word now because of politics and all those things. And I don't subscribe or ascribe or whatever the scribe word is for that to any of that stuff that goes with, quote, like politics and all that garbage. But back to growing up as a Baptist boy. We didn't do Lent whatsoever. In fact, I was pretty convinced and taught directly or indirectly, I don't remember, that all Catholics were going to hell. And, you know, and let me just say this. I can't give you one thought without going on a side trail in a rabbit trail and then hoping I can come back and remember the first thought I was even on, right? I hope you can handle that. I hope it's somewhat even entertaining to you because I'm fine with the sidetrack, but then I can't remember the first track and I hate that. I sound stupid and I don't want to go back and edit all this because that takes up a lot of time that I don't have. All right. So I thought all Catholics were going to hell, basically, is what I was taught directly or indirectly. Tangent, sidetrack, we'll come back to being a Baptist boy about Lent here in a moment. All Catholics are not going to hell. Many Catholics are Jesus-loving, believing in Jesus for the forgiveness of their sins Catholics. Now, there are also problems with Catholic theology, and we can talk about that in another episode. That would be grand. We'll mark that down. If that interests you, let me know. I have a few blog articles about that already. But point is, the Catholic Church doctrine, teaching, etc., definitely can lead towards legalism. It can lead toward a works-based salvation, sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly. But also realize that the Catholic Church is as diverse as Christianity itself. I mean, you read Henry Nouwen, and it sounds like you're reading, you know, you're any evangelical sort of celebrity pastor about the gospel. I mean, a Francis Chan book and a Henry Nouwen book, they sound the same. That's my point. And Henry Nouwen is a now deceased Catholic priest. Amazing, amazing spiritual role model for me and so many evangelicals that I know. Totally grace-based, totally relationship with Jesus-based. So hope you understand where I'm coming from there. On the same note, you talk about, let's say, the Baptist Church. There's bunches of Baptists who, I guess, to put it as crassly as I did initially, that are going to hell. And it doesn't mean if you're Baptist, you're going to heaven, especially if you're down south. You know, friends of mine that have lived in Texas, it's like everybody's Baptist and everybody's going to heaven. It's like, no, you know, being Baptist is not going to get you into heaven. And there's its own legalism kind of in within that. But I would make an argument that on paper, the theology, man, I'm really on a tangent now, but let's just ignore all that. I'm going to punt the rest of that, and we're going to come back to what I was as a Baptist boy, thinking all Catholics were going to hell. And so, because of legalism, because of works-based salvation, because of Ephesians 2, 8, and 9, it's by grace you've been saved. I'm going to paraphrase here. Of course, I have this memorized, but not while I'm recording live. It's by grace you've been saved through faith, not from good works, so that nobody can boast. And so Catholics, in my mind, thought you were saved by good works. And Lent was one of those ways, one of those good works ways of being saved. And so the whole idea of Lent was like, man, that was That would have been like an Israelite in the Old Testament, and here comes the Canaanites, you know, with their gods or something. It was like, get away, that is idolatry, that you're trying to save yourself through that. And to be candid, I didn't have any Catholic friends at my public high school that were, that I knew of. I mean, they were there, but in my circle of friends and acquaintances, the popular kids, they all seem to have gone to Catholic school and Catholic church, and there wasn't a lot of Jesus following going on that I could see or tell. And I even asked them about Lent one year, and I wanted to know, you know, why they did Lent, and because in my mind, I'm like, you're doing this because, I mean, it was like, I didn't think they were Christians. I didn't see the fruit of obedience to Christ, you know, in their life. It was a lot of worldly. Another rabbit trail there. They didn't have a good reason, from what I remember from high school, for doing Lent. And I just concluded that Lent was another part of the legalistic way that Catholics try to earn their salvations. And so, and I think many Baptists think that. I think many evangelicals think that. So whenever they see the word Lent, they think stay away from Lent because it's how somebody earns their salvation. Now, what somebody else does with Lent, I guess it's kind of their business. I mean, I don't mean it's right. I just mean because somebody else does it in a way that's wrong doesn't mean it can't be awesome for Christians. Like that's like saying, well, so-and-so reads their Bible every day and they do it because they think that's how they're going to go to heaven. Therefore, never read your Bible every day because that's a way of earning heaven, right? That's, you see what I'm saying? So that's what a lot of evangelicals have done with Lent. We don't need to do that. Lent is awesome when it's looked at as a spiritual discipline. And when we take a step back and slow down and realize just how much we need spiritual discipline in our life. See, when you live a life that does not have spiritual rhythms, spiritual disciplines in it, you end up living at the speed of light. You just go, 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 go. And when you're not going, you're busy, right? If you're not going, you're on Facebook. You're even like watching TV sometimes is okay. It can be a healthy thing. Like, hey, I'm not working right now. I'm just kind of chilling, relaxing. But that can also just be something that fills up your day. Clutters up your day, clutters up your life, where you have to look and say, when am I slowing down, spending time with the Lord, doing something intentional? That's really the word, intentionality. And for evangelical folks, we're like, well, yeah, I could preach a sermon on that and no problem. But it's like, I'm in control, so I'm going to slow down right now. I'm going to do my devotions in the morning. But even my devotional time often, and this is, again, another subject of my devotions, is read. And we miss this idea of giving God space to actually do something on his agenda rather than on our agenda. And so the point of the intentionality is really the long history of Christian tradition prior to, I don't know when, I don't have the church history timeline in my mind for this, but prior to evangelicalism, it was, and currently to this day, in a lot of non-evangelical but still following Jesus traditions, the rhythms are already set. You pray at certain hours of the day, and Jesus would have done this. Jews did this, and so he would go to the temple for morning prayer. And again, I don't have all my notes in front of me, but so don't correct me on this, but there's, and if you're from this tradition, it's like normal for you. I'm not from this tradition. I learned a lot of this stuff when I did my 2-year Transforming Center, Transforming Community with Ruth Haley Barton, where we did these retreats and we learned these rhythms that are a part of the Christian tradition. And wow, are they healthy to have. On the retreats, we would do group corporate prayer in the morning, and we would do it, I think it was before lunch, and then before dinner, and then at night. And this would have been the regular rhythm of Jesus's community, something like that. And for centuries has been the tradition in many Christian traditions. as well. And in evangelical land, we just throw all that out the window. There's no, don't tell me when to pray, and don't tell me what to pray, because I'm an independent evangelical, you know, and we're just so in love with our independence that we'll pray when we want to pray. And there's a problem with that. When you pray when you want to pray, nothing is intentional. You just become this morphed orb with culture, and you'll pray along the way, sure, but there's nothing interrupting. There's not something saying, no, this is where you stop. So the Sabbath, for example, in Jewish culture, you stopped on the Sabbath, and you didn't do anything on the Sabbath. I remember reading about a Christian who'd converted from Judaism and had grown up in a traditional, I don't remember if it was Orthodox, but a conservative Jewish family that observed the Sabbath. And they said the thing they missed most about their Judaism was the Sabbath and how ingrained it was in their culture and their life. It was like, no, you must rest. You will stop. You must take time out from being crazy and hectic and busy and doing all these sorts of things. And as Christians, we're humans. And so if we don't force ourselves to do those things, we're not going to do them. Sometimes we'll do that in other ways. Like if you have a set person you're accountable to and you meet weekly, and that is a religious time. You know, we religiously meet weekly for coffee. Like that's what we're talking about here. So what does Lent do? What Lent does is it interrupts. It interrupts. And the point of Lent is this. From my perspective, okay, is you give up something that you're accustomed to, something that you're used to. It can be something that's kind of this frivolous thing, maybe not the most healthy thing in the world. It could be something you go to for comfort. So, for example, you go to Facebook for comfort. So give up Facebook during Lent. Or you go to dessert for comfort. So give up dessert for Lent. But the idea is it's something you think about, you go to, it's a part of your regular life that if it weren't there, man, you would notice. Like if it weren't there, you'd be like, whoa, my system is off. I'm used to this thing being there and it's not there. And when that thing isn't there and your awareness is heightened, then you go to Jesus instead. You say, oh, Facebook isn't there and I gave up Facebook. And so I'm going to think about, I'm going to meditate on, I'm going to intentionally in this moment go to Jesus for my comfort, to be with him, to meditate on him, to think about him, to maybe open up scripture and read something instead. But that's what it does. And it's powerful. It's powerful. It truly makes you think about Jesus in a deeply worshipful, meditative way. And it's hard at the beginning. Depending on what you give up, you fight against it. You want that thing. You're like, man, I want that thing. And many evangelicals were like, well, it's not sinful to have a brownie, so don't tell me I can't have a brownie. Okay, we're not. Calm down, evangelical who likes brownies. We're not telling you it's sinful. It's not what this is. It's not always about that. What I'm saying is, if for this intentional season, you choose, not because you're earning your salvation, but as a spiritual discipline, you choose to deprive yourself of something, whatever it might be, that you normally would be a go-to for you, I promise you, it's just like fasting. It's going to heighten your awareness of Jesus in a very, very real way. Hopefully to the point that when Lent is over, there's a new connection you have with Jesus. There's a new go-to you have with Jesus. And then eventually you get back into your routine. And then next Ash Wednesday rolls around and you do the same thing again. And again, refocusing, re-clarifying with Jesus. So here's what I'm doing for Lent this year. Yes, the Bible says, don't tell people what you're fasting over. You'll lose your treasure in heaven. Don't write that verse to me. I'm telling you about this because I want to invite you to think about doing it as well. It started hitting me this last year, particularly with Christmas and my kids' birthdays. My kids are age 7, 5, and 1, and we just buy them a bunch of stuff for their birthdays. It's not like we're spending thousands of dollars because kids' toys aren't very expensive, but we're buying them toys that they don't need and more toys that they don't need and more toys that they don't need and books that they don't need and trinkets that they don't need. and they have all this stuff piled up. We are like the hoarder's version of like children's stuff, and you might be as well if you have kids. And it's hard even to control it because grandma and grandpa buy them toys that they don't need, and aunts and uncles buy them toys that they don't need, and it's almost a part of our cultural norm. It's like, yeah, I buy your kids stuff they don't need because I love you, and that's what it means to be family, and there's not a lot we can do about that. So it was hitting me, I'm like, we spend this money, and this isn't true for everybody, right? And I'm not like crazy rich, but I'm also not in destitute poverty, and some of you listening really might be in destitute poverty, and so I understand this is not how everybody lives, but for us, it began to feel like we would spend money really easily on ourselves. Okay, so $5 on a kid's toy, okay, I can do that. $5 on myself here and there, I can do that. So if it was something that we were going to spend on ourselves, we would do it, and we would do it without thinking about it. $5 here, $20 there, $15 there, and there's budgeting things we can talk about. That's not my point here. My point is, if you have a Netflix subscription, you're probably like, yeah, whatever. That's part of being alive. I have Netflix. If you have, you know, whatever your fill in the blank thing might be. But if it came to giving money to something like World Relief, which is an organization that helps the most vulnerable around the world through the local church, very gospel centered, and it's doing amazing work to help the most vulnerable. And I would just say, hey, give $10 a month to them. You'd be like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, really? $10? I mean, I don't know if I have. I mean, I get. All right. Are you trying to guilt me into giving $10? And at the end of the day, you don't do it. And again, not that you have to give to World Relief, because there's lots of other places you may already be giving and whatnot. But I observed how easy it is to spend money on a trinket or a thing for my kid or for myself, or how easy it is to go out to eat, how easy it is to blow $20 at a restaurant, or if you're going out with a couple nowadays, $40 at a restaurant, or even a fast food, you're blowing $8. And would you give that $8 just as easily to an organization, a missions organization or a Christian organization helping the poor, or someone personally that you know that is in need? And in my soul and my heart, I was realizing, no, I would not do that. And we would not do that. And so I thought, wouldn't it be a cool exercise to try? And this is what my wife and I are going to be doing for Lent, is whenever we spend money on ourselves in any type of luxurious way. When I say luxurious, I mean something we don't need. And I'm defining that as going out to dinner. I'm defining that as, for me, even if I'm the one shopping, like buying things that I don't really need grocery shopping, but I'm just like, yeah, I want that bag of Doritos. I don't need that bag of Doritos, but I love Doritos. They are the best food in the world. So I'm going to buy them. And we do that all the time with, including any time that I would buy alcohol. So beer is like $5 if you buy a beer out somewhere. It's like, yeah, whatever, no problem. I'll have three, you know. And if you're buying mixed drinks and bottles of wine and all this stuff, just adds up and adds up. And so over the period of Lent, whenever my wife or I are going to buy something for ourselves that is a non-essential item, we are going to give an equal amount of money to World Relief right away. So I bought Doritos. They were $2. $2 goes to World Relief. I bought my kid a toy for $10. $10 goes to World Relief. I spent $50 going out to dinner, which I rarely do. But $50 goes to World Relief. And look, here's the thing. I'm not setting this up to be legalistic for you or for myself. What I'm doing is I'm wanting to interrupt, again, it's about interruption, how easily it is to spend money on myself or on my kids. Go to Starbucks, and you might spend $5 at Starbucks. I spend $2 because I just get a little black coffee. But still, you spent $5 to World Relief. You spent $2, $2 to World Relief. And the idea is multifold here. One is to realize, wow, I spend money a lot myself. Like, maybe I'll have better spending habits by the end of this. It's not to punish you, by the way, for, oh, I went out to eat, I have to punish myself. That's sort of funny that we would think giving to World Relief, helping those most in need with their physical needs and the gospel. By the way, it's this amazing developmental work that breaks the bonds of dependency, where people take on their own sort of oppression with the help of the church and the help of World Relief to find true freedom, as well as the strength of the church and the gospel behind them. I just love World Relief and can't say enough good things about them. But to think that, well, it's a punishment that I have to punish myself. No, you're blessing. Like, it's a huge blessing to others when you know, give this money away. But to think about, too, I think the core of this is, what is money for? And to that, just by the end of Lent, to realize, culture has trained me wrong. I think that's what it is. I think culture has trained me wrong. Not to guilt you and to shame you into buying. I'm not saying to stop buying anything for yourself. I'm saying it shouldn't be so easy and almost thoughtless to spend regularly large chunks of money on ourselves, and lots of small chunks. And when the idea comes to help someone else, to be like, whoa, let me get back to you on that. No, I can't right now. It's not in the budget. But to realize, wow, like, my budget is, it's very one-sided. That's the point. And there's some very radical things Jesus says about money, and we can talk about those. But this is something I'm doing for Lent. And I want to invite you to do it with me. I'm posting a blog post today with this podcast episode, and the blog post is on why Lent is so awesome and what I'm doing for Lent with World Relief. I'm calling it Lenting. I don't think that's a word, I'm making it up. Lenting for World Relief. Will you join me? And if you want to do this too, so from now until Easter, if you spend money on something for yourself or your family that's a luxury item, non-essential item, that you're saying, yeah, I'm going to give this money as well to World Relief, I'll have the link, the donate link on there. Just add a comment. And maybe nobody will do this. That's fine. But add a comment. You can do it anonymously, so nobody knows you're doing this. That's fine. You can add and just say, I'm in. I'm going to do this too. I think that would be cool to see that, and maybe to debrief it with some people on what that was like for your soul. And that's what I'm doing for Lent. And I think that's why Lent is awesome, because you can do different things based on what God is doing in your life. And that's what I'm doing this year, and that's what my family is doing this year. So now comes the favorite part of the show for everyone, children and senior citizens alike. Favorite segment of The Flip Side, Noah's Rant.
Noah's Rant.
All right, the rant for episode 2. There is a Marathon gas station. It is in Okemos, Michigan, which is like 5 minutes from where I live. It's one of Lansing's suburbs. And two things about this Marathon gas station. First and foremost, there is a large sign on the side of the building, fancy sign, with this steaming cup of coffee. And on the sign, three-dimensional sign coming off the building, it says, Folgers Cafe. Now, there are so many things wrong with the words Folgers and Cafe together and being advertised as a good thing. So, first of all, you have a gas station that is selling dirt mixed with water, Folgers, calling it coffee, right? It's one thing if you sell that and can sleep at night, first of all, or that you can drink that and your body is able to handle that. Okay, that is one thing. I will pray for you that the Lord softens and changes your heart. But it is an entirely other level to advertise selling Folgers coffee as if it were something good and desirable that would bring customers into your store. Like, whoa, they sell Folgers at a Folgers cafe? Are you kidding me? I am there. That is such a feature to this gas station. Something is sick in your head if you think that selling dirt mixed with water is somehow going to attract customers to you, that you would advertise this as a selling point of your company. This would be the equivalent of a fast food restaurant creating a custom three-dimensional sign on the side of their building, and what they had done is they had found all of the old French fries, like the ones that fell in the bottom of the fryer and had been in there for weeks and months, all the ones that had fallen on the floor and had been swept into the dustpan, and they got them all together, the ones that were on somebody's tray, and you know, they threw them into the garbage and they fished those out, and they found all those old grungy fries, like the floor fries and this rotten, decrepit fries, and they made a sign on the side of their restaurant that said, "We have decrepit floor fries in a cafe. Come into our restaurant to eat these things." Now, it would be one thing if you thought it was okay to eat the fry that had been in the fryer for the last 5 months. I'll pray for you. I'll pray that God changes your heart. I'll pray that you receive the help you need for the state of mental health that you are in, that you think that would be okay, or to eat a fry that you found underneath the countertop that had been there for 3 weeks and had things growing on it. And if you were decided to eat that, I would give you a gracious pass. But if you go to the point on the side of your building to put up a billboard that actually advertises that you are not only okay with eating those fries, but selling those fries to customers, and not only selling those fries to customers, but highlighting it as a feature of your restaurant. This is a problem. Marathon Station in Okemos. What? I don't even... I have no words. Here's the other thing about Marathon. Oh, these are the guys. You've all been there. You're like, oh, gas is whatever, $2.19. Fantastic. Everywhere else, it's $2.29. I wonder why it's $2.19 here. I don't care. I'm going to get gas here. In fact, I'll wait in line because it's cheaper and everybody else wants it. So I'm going to wait in line to get gas here, and it's worth it. It's 10 cents cheaper. And then you get up to the pump and didn't look closely at the sign. Why would you? You're used to seeing gas prices, $2.19, price of gas. And you realize that it's only $2.19 if you also buy a car wash. If you spend $6 on a car wash, you'll get 10 cents off of your tank of gas. Per gallon. If I wanted a car wash, I would go to a car wash. If I wanted to spend $6, I would go spend $6, but I don't want to spend $6. I actually want to save 10 cents a gallon. And you not only lied to me, you tricked me. You tricked me, Marathon. And let me tell you once, you tricked me once, you won't trick me again. I will never go to Marathon again because I don't want to look like an idiot. I don't. They made me look like an idiot once. And let me tell you what, I can't remember. That was, I don't know if that just got picked up. I'll talk about a rant. That was Amazon's Alexa in my house that my wife bought talking on the podcast. Not invited. Not a special guest. I want to say, so funny, I just want to say shut up. And my kids tell me not to say shut up and stupid. So now literally when I go to say them, I have like a guilty conscience about them. Please stop talking, Alexa. You are not in this conversation. So what I was saying is I don't go to mobile gas stations anymore because I can't remember which gas station it is that tricked me with the car wash thing, if it was Marathon or Mobil, and they both start with M and they're both red, white, and blue. So I'm going to be double extra safe and I'm not going to either one. I'm done for life because the last thing I'm going to do is wait that time, get up in line, and usually here's the thing. You don't want the car wash, so then the price of gas there is more than the Speedway across the street. And you're like, I'm not going to swear. I don't do that anymore. I have to pay somebody a dollar every time I do. So it's not worth it because I'm trying to save money, right? If you do that, you might as well just buy the expensive gas in the first place. So this has got to stop. It's an injustice. And that's what Noah's rant is here for. It is to stop the injustices that plague our society. So now you know, Marathon and Okemos, you've been put on alert. And now the elite podcast audience of the Flip Side have also been put on alert. This concludes episode 2 of the Flip Side podcast. I will talk to you next time. Please do send me an email. Don't be shy. podcast@beyondthebattle.net. Let's make this thing real. Let's make this thing professional. We can get to 10 patrons. I believe we can do it. I believe we can do it. I believe we can get to 20 patrons. I don't, actually. I don't think we can get to 20. But I think we can get to 10. Maybe we can get to 10. I had a good tagline last time. Oh, yeah, yeah. I will see you on the flip side. Even though I won't see you, I'll talk to you. On the flip side.
The Flip Side with Noah Filipiak is a South Francis Press production. Copyright Noah Filipiak. www.noahfilipiak.com. Theme music by Kyle Lake at K Lake Music. Use with permission. Please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or wherever podcasts are found. Souls needing revivals. What am I do? Influence like the cup full of that Bombay. Kelly's to them Tom Hanks. Lexus to them Andres. Hoping they check in my inner reverence. Stressing for leverage. That they see the king's tracks on the payment leading to heaven. Yo, yo, dripping in that gold that don't perish. People selling fake. See the green around their belly. Taking refuge in his hand. See his palms, my living quarters. Close them when I'm finished. It is time to bring me closer. That's no purgatory, cause you're in or you're out. When you see him in the clouds, then you know it's going down. Raise them, raise them, raise them. They've been sleeping for some ages. Now all God's babies so confused by this hatred. Pulpit preachers shouldn't aim to be A-list. Money probably long, but short is with your days. Have you ever heard the sound of freedom? Pointing to redemption, to the one who got them splinters. Cause that cross is nothing pretty. So why the beauty pageants? And caught up in emotions and following your passions. Talking that freedom, our people need them more than an Easter. Or coffee shop discussions, debating over baristas. Please sir, this is why we inked up. Even when they do the autopsy, they still see him. Freedom, freedom, freedom coming quickly. Bars from the spirit. Put it through the preamp and mix it like a chemist. Put it in the airwaves and hoping that they hear it. If there's some confusion, then I hope you see him clearly. Raise them, raise them, raise them. They've been sleeping for some ages. Now all God's babies so confused by this hatred. Pulpit preachers shouldn't aim to be A-list. Money probably long, but sure it's with your daisy.